Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Wednesday, May 27th, 2020. Coming up this hour.
The reopen rally continues. U.S. futures gain as officials relax lockdowns.
Unrest takes hold in Hong Kong. Police fire pepper spray as protests in the city gather steam.
And sanctions targeting China. The White House considers penalties tied to Beijing's crackdown on Hong Kong.
New York Governor Cuomo meets with President Trump today. Plus, New Jersey's governor says outdoor graduations will be allowed in July. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The NHL regular season is over. The Rangers and Islanders will be in the playoffs in July. Baseball made its economic proposal to the players.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures are pointing to a third straight day of gains. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 39 points, Dow futures up 376, and NASDAQ futures up 99. The DAX in Germany is up 1.8%, CAC in Paris up 1.9%, and the FTSE 100 is up 1.6%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 0.69%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.17%. COMEX crude oil is down a third of a percent or 12 cents at $34.23 a barrel, and COMEX gold down 0.7% or $11.30 at $17.16.80 an ounce. Nathan.
Karen, thanks. The gain in U.S. futures comes as the push to reopen continues and U.S. coronavirus cases continue to slow. For the very latest, we're joined live by Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Nathan. Data show daily COVID-19 cases across the country rising at the slowest pace since March, just 1.1%. That's down from last week's 1.4% rate. In New York, hospitalizations and deaths reached the lowest level since the outbreak began. Meantime, the Trump administration is targeting an aggressive expansion of testing. It wants to hit 13 million tests this month. With 5 days left in May, it's currently 4.5 million short of that goal. In New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is turning his attention to reopening New York City.
We're going to turn the page on COVID-19, and we're going to start focusing on reopening and how we reopen and how smart we are in reopening.
As hospitalizations head lower, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio is targeting the first half of June to restart business in the city, and that includes extra safety measures.
We're thinking about all the pieces. How do people come back to work? What kind of precautions need to be in place? How do we monitor it? How do we inspect it? How do we make sure everyone's doing what they're supposed to be doing?
De Blasio says the city has hired 1,700 contact tracers. A phase one reopening will likely include construction, manufacturing, and curbside pickup for retailers.
In California, at least 47 counties have started reopening. Even barbershops and salons in those regions are getting back to work as Governor Gavin Newsom sees infections holding steady. Here with details is Ed Baxter from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Governor Newsom says stabilization in case numbers is the key.
Ultimately, we want to see them go down, but we are holding steady in that positivity rate, and that's encouraging news.
California has 58 counties, and the governor says individual guidelines and testing are on the state's website, but that on a regional basis, there is movement being made back into manufacturing and retail. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thank you. Across the Pacific, unrest is brewing again in Hong Kong. Police fired pepper spray downtown as protesters hit the street to oppose China's increased control over the city. Begin more from Bloomberg's Karen Lee in Hong Kong.
This is a return to a lot of the unrest that we saw last summer, and police have arrested at least 16 people so far today. And for a lot of people here, we're using today to get an idea of how big the protest movement could get as it seems to be resurging. Are we going to see things like we saw last summer on that scale, or is it going to be smaller, more scattered? So we're really looking at today as a bit of an indicator.
Demonstrations are being organized against China's plan to impose broad national security measures in Hong Kong. Hundreds have gathered to demonstrate in the city's central shopping hub. There's been a heavy police presence, and that's dispersed protesters in other areas across the city.
Well, the White House is watching these protests closely. Now, sources tell us it's considering sanctions on China tied to the crackdown on Hong Kong. For the very latest on that front, we turn to Bloomberg's Saleha Mohsen in Washington.
the Treasury Department could impose controls on transactions and freeze assets of Chinese officials, businesses, and financial institutions for implementing the new national security law that is curtailing the rights and freedoms of Hong Kong citizens. So far, we know that the Trump administration is considering the range of sanctions. They have not come to any decision whether to do that yet.
Meantime, the House is set to pass a different set of legislation sanctioning Chinese officials for human rights abuses against Muslims. The measure passed the Senate with unanimous consent and also has broad support in the House. That vote is set for today.
Meantime, President Trump is also taking aim at Twitter. For the first time, the social network added a fact-check label to the president's tweets after he made unsubstantiated claims about mail-in voting. Twitter added links reading, quote, "Get the facts about mail-in ballots." President Trump did not take the move lightly. He responded with a tweet saying, "Twitter is completely stifling free speech, and I, as president, will not allow it to happen."
Turning to Europe now, we have details on plans to stem the economic fallout from the pandemic. Bloomberg News has learned the EU will propose a fiscal package today totaling more than $800 billion. Sources tell us funds would be distributed to member states through a combination of grants and loans. Here with more is Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo reporting from Brussels.
Everyone will have to agree to this. Ultimately, this is a unanimous decision that will have to be approved by all of the EU 27 member states. What is key here and really changes from prior debates in Europe is that even the fiscal hawks have gone very quiet. And countries like Austria are also saying, you know, maybe there could be a compromise that we could agree to. We just don't want to see debt becoming mutualized.
Austria, Denmark, Sweden, and the Netherlands have been pushing for loans over grants. Sources tell us a third of the funds in this proposal would come in the form of loans. The rest would be grants.
Also coming up today, an exclusive interview with John Williams. Tune in for a conversation with the New York Fed president at 9:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Catch that on both Bloomberg Radio and television. Futures this morning are on the rise. S&P futures up 37 points. Dow futures up 358 and NASDAQ futures up 90. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 0.69%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thanks, Karen. It's 6:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr is here with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo meets with President Trump today to discuss infrastructure. Cuomo outlined several infrastructure projects he'd like his state to tackle in partnership with the federal government.
There is no better time to build than right now. You need to restart the economy. You need to create jobs. And you need to renew and repair this country's economy and its infrastructure. Now is the time to do it.
The projects include a new Penn Station, a train link to LaGuardia Airport, rebuilding train tunnels under the Hudson, and expanding the Second Avenue subway. Long Island will officially start the first phase of reopening its economy today. It comes after a shutdown of non-essential businesses for more than 2 months due to the coronavirus pandemic. New York City is seeking authority to borrow possibly as much as $7 billion if necessary to make up for the revenue lost because of the pandemic. It calls for the city's Transitional Finance Authority to issue debt to make up for the projected loss through mid-2021. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says he will unveil a plan today that will allow outdoor in-person graduations this summer with limits.
To the class of 2020, I am proud to say that you will have your opportunity to join with your classmates and families to celebrate your graduation.
Murphy says it will begin July 6th. A judge who suggested that a woman seeking a restraining order could close your legs to prevent a sexual assault was removed from the bench by the New Jersey Supreme Court. State Superior Court Judge John Russo was also permanently barred from presiding over a courtroom. Joe Biden says President Trump is a fool who is stoking deaths for suggesting that wearing a mask in public to combat the spread of COVID-19 isn't a sign of leadership. The presumptive Democratic presidential nominee also talked about President Trump attacking former President Barack Obama.
I was talking to a friend of mine today, a leader in the African-American community, and I said, "Why is he going after Barack?" He said, "Because it stirs up his base. Barack's a black man." I don't know what that's the reason, but all of a sudden, Barack, most popular guy out there, and he's attacking Barack. What's that all about?
Biden also told CNN he hopes to resume in-person events soon. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's almost 6:10 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stashar.
Good morning, Nathan. The NHL regular season is now officially over. Let the Stanley Cup playoffs begin. Commissioner Gary Bettman says it's what everyone wants.
Our fans are telling us an overwhelming numbers that they want us to complete the season, if at all possible. And our players and our teams are clear that they want to play and bring the season to its rightful conclusion.
Bettman announced a 2014 playoff field that's up from the usual 16. The Rangers and Islanders will be part of it, not the Devils. The Rangers, who would not have made the playoffs normally, will face Carolina in the first round. Not known yet if that'll be a best of five or seven. The Islanders will take on Florida. They're not saying yet where. There will be a hub city for each conference. Training camp will begin no later than July 1st, so expect games mid to late July, pending final approval that this could all be done safely. The day after the first Memorial Day without baseball since 1880, the first economic proposal made by owners to players regarding pay and a shortened season without fans and union reaction, not positive. One used the word disgusting. The Mets' Marcus Stroman tweeted out, having a season does not look promising. MLB is pitching a sliding scale where the highest paid players would see their salaries cut the most. Could lead to division among the players. The two sides need to come to an agreement if they're going to be able to play ball. The Jets just got Joe Flacco to be their backup quarterback, but he says coming off surgery, he won't be ready to play in week one. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
And John, another baseball team is cutting jobs due to the pandemic. The Oakland Athletics are placing scouts and other front office employees on furlough and suspending pay for minor leaguers and cutting salaries for executives, though the A's will continue to pay health care, 401k, and pension costs for employees. The A's are owned by John Fisher, whose family founded The Gap. Forbes estimates his wealth at more than $2 billion. This is Bloomberg. And a reminder to listeners working from home or elsewhere, Bloomberg Radio is available on all your favorite apps, BloombergBusinessRadio.com, iHeart, SiriusXM, and TuneIn, as well as Bloomberg.com, and on the Bloomberg Terminal by typing RADIGO.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and this headline crossing the Bloomberg. Zoom Info Technologies, a business intelligence platform owned by private equity firms, is going ahead with an IPO. It filed to offer 44.5 million shares, anticipating a price range of $16 to $18 a share. European stocks and U.S. stock index futures are extending their advance this morning. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 35 points, Dow futures up 348, NASDAQ futures up 76. The DAX in Germany is up 1.8%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 0.69%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.17%. NYMEX crude oil is down 0.8% or 29 cents at $34.07 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.5% or $9.10 at $17.19.10 an ounce. The euro, 1.1014 against the dollar. British pound, 1.2324. And the yen's at 107.72. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, U.S. coronavirus cases continue to slow. Bloomberg's John Tucker in New York has more in this live report.
And Michael, coronavirus cases in the U.S. increased 1.1% as compared to the same time yesterday. That's actually the slowest daily increase since March. Deaths in the U.S. now stand at over 98,000. New York saw its fewest new hospitalizations and fatalities since the outbreak began. There were 73 deaths, down from a high last month of nearly 800. And the Trump administration has released coronavirus testing targets for May, an aggressive expansion that would have some states doubling and quadrupling the number they had done through late April. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, John. President Trump plans to travel to Florida to watch today's launch of SpaceX's manned test mission to the International Space Station. The launch will mark the first time NASA astronauts have blasted off from U.S. soil since the end of the Space Shuttle program in 2011. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 6:19 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And the slowing coronavirus case count, along with the reopening of economies, are fueling a lot of optimism in markets. But what of the risk of a second wave of infection? For more, let's turn to Andy Pekosh, professor of molecular microbiology and immunology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Pekosh, I'm sure you saw those images over the Memorial Day weekend of packed beach boardwalks and swimming pools. What was your reaction to that? Are we setting ourselves up for something we won't want?
Well, you know, it's been a really long haul for the past 2 to 3 months, depending on where in the country you've been, in terms of dealing with the public health interventions that we've had to limit the outbreak. We want to make sure we're not going to go backwards, because it's been a long time that it took us to get this epidemic under control, and a second wave coming through would cause us to probably go back to another long period of time where we have these interventions in place to limit that. Social distancing has to be a common theme that everybody continues to practice, even when they have the ability to go out and go to beaches and stores and restaurants and those kind of things.
Are you concerned that businesses will be able to enforce social distancing as they push to reopen?
In Baltimore here, I've been pleasantly surprised how some of the businesses have responded to this and have put in place good measures to try to maintain social distancing. I think it's always going to be something that people have to be aware of. It's not just the business's responsibility. It's the people who are going into those businesses that have their own personal responsibility to maintain their own public health interventions and social distancing.
What are you looking at in terms of the possibility of a second wave of infection if social distancing isn't enforced as readily as you might like to see? I mean, what kinds of numbers could we be looking at?
Well, the next 2 weeks is what's going to be really important, because that'll correspond with some of the loosening of public health interventions that has happened across many of the states. So what we'll be looking for primarily is the hospitalization rate. The main thing that social distancing does is it keeps the rate of severe infections down so that our hospitals don't get overwhelmed. So it's the hospitalization rate that's really, really going to be critical. We may see increased numbers of cases, but again, we're also ramping up testing, and so we should expect to see some increased numbers of perhaps mild and asymptomatic testing. But it's the hospitalization rates that are really going to be critical to keep an eye on.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the ramp up of testing. We heard from the White House this week that it plans to have something like 12.9 million tests done by the end of the month. Is that a goal that's feasible in your view?
I think it is. And I think as we move to the next phase of trying to deal with this pandemic, which is to go back to identifying cases and contact tracing them to isolate cases of COVID-19, we're going to need to have large amounts of testing that are freely available, that are available to people who are not just symptomatic, but who have had potential exposures. And so the more testing we have, the better we'll be at that contact tracing that we need to do to maintain this opening up of the economy.
And this is basically the swab testing, the simple testing that we saw New York Governor Cuomo do last week, right, in terms of seeing whether you've been infected, not necessarily the antibody tests.
Right, right. And, you know, there's been some really good movement over the past few weeks in terms of tests that are using saliva as a means of checking for the virus and for checking for antibodies. We really are hoping that there'll be an easier way to do testing in the future, because that's going to facilitate even more testing.
Where are we in terms of the research on whether antibody testing can confirm whether people who have been infected are no longer infectious once they've let the disease run its course?
Yeah, so the definitive studies haven't been out there, but I would say that everything is looking very positive right now. It seems like the vast number of people who are infected generate a good antibody response. We find in those antibody responses these neutralizing antibodies that target the virus and stop the virus from replicating. So right now, all signs look good in terms of how people are responding to the infection. We're going to wait a couple more months to see how long these responses last. And as we keep following people, we'll look at the rate of reinfection in that population to see if that's really lower than the regular population.
All right. Dr. Andy Pekosh, always good getting your insights. Thanks so much for being with us this morning. Andy Pekosh is professor of molecular microbiology and immunology at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And at 6:25 on Wall Street, the reopened rally continues with S&P futures up 35 points, Dow futures up 347, NASDAQ futures a gain of 77 points. This is Bloomberg.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It is 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are gaining as lockdown measures ease across the country and coronavirus cases continue to slow. For the latest, we're joined live by Bloomberg's John Tucker. John, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Data show daily COVID-19 cases rising at the slowest pace since March, just 1.1%. Compare that to the 1.4% rate from the prior week. In New York State, hospitalizations and deaths reached the lowest level since the outbreak began. In New York City, Mayor Bill de Blasio is targeting the first half of June to restart business. And Long Island starts to reopen today. In New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Let's turn to Hong Kong now, where unrest is brewing again. Police fired pepper spray downtown as protesters hit the streets to oppose China's increased control over the city. Hundreds gathered in the city's central shopping hub, though there has been a heavy police presence that's dispersed demonstrators in other areas across the city.
The White House is watching those protests closely. Now sources tell us it's considering sanctions on China tied to the crackdown. And Bloomberg's Karen Lee has details from Hong Kong.
The Treasury Department could impose controls on transactions and freeze the assets of some Chinese officials and businesses because they implemented a new national security law here in Hong Kong that could curtail the rights and freedoms of Hong Kong citizens. We're also reporting that other measures under consideration by the Trump administration include visa restrictions for Communist Party officials.
Meantime, the House is set to pass a different set of legislation sanctioning Chinese officials for human rights abuses against Muslims. The measure passed the Senate with unanimous consent and also has broad support in the House. The vote is set for today.
President Trump and Twitter are picking a fight. For the first time, the social network added a fact-check label to the president's tweets after he made unsubstantiated claims about mail-in voting. Twitter added links reading, quote, "Get the facts about mail-in ballots." President Trump didn't take the move lightly. He responded with a tweet saying, "Twitter is completely stifling free speech, and I, as president, will not allow it to happen."
And finally, in Europe, we have details on plans to stem the economic fallout from the pandemic. Bloomberg News has learned the EU will propose a fiscal package today, totaling more than $800 billion. Sources say funds would be distributed to member states through a combination of grants and loans. Futures this morning on the rise. S&P futures up 36 points. Dow futures up 349. NASDAQ futures are up 77. The 10-year Treasury little change, yield 0.69%. And the yield on the two-year, 0.17%. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. It's 6:33 on Wall Street. Now let's bring in Michael Barr for more on what's going on around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says he will travel to Washington to meet with President Donald Trump and plan to discuss major investments in infrastructure as a way to jumpstart a U.S. economy devastated by the coronavirus pandemic. During the briefing, Cuomo explained his plan for LaGuardia Airport.
Accelerating LaGuardia Airport, which is going to be the first new airport in this nation in 25 years. Traffic is low, passenger volume is lower, let's accelerate that construction now.
Cuomo also says he will talk with the president about renovation and expansion of Penn Station in New York City. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says his state is ready to figure out how outdoor graduation ceremonies could happen over the summer. Murphy says more guidance will be released today.
To allow for outdoor graduation ceremonies to celebrate our students' accomplishments starting July 6th. This guidance will include social distancing requirements and other necessary health and safety measures.
COVID-19 cases in New Jersey have been on a downward trend, although the state hasn't seen 14 days of consecutive downward numbers for all COVID-19 metrics. Monday's video of an altercation between a white female executive and a black man in Central Park went viral almost immediately. Now the woman, Amy Cooper, was fired from her job at Franklin Templeton. Cooper is seen calling New York police on her mobile phone, saying there is an African-American man threatening her in Central Park.
Please don't come close to me.
Please take your phone off.
Please don't come close to me.
I'm taking a picture and calling the cops.
Please, please call the cops. Please call the cops.
I'm going to tell them there's an African-American man threatening my life.
Please tell them whatever you like.
The man, Christian Cooper, had earlier asked her to leash her dog in the wooded area of the park, which is a requirement. She later told a news station that she is sorry for what happened. Protests were held in Minneapolis after an unarmed black man died following his arrest. George Floyd was pinned to the ground by a police officer who had his knee on Floyd's neck. Four police officers have been fired. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. It's 6:35 on Wall Street. John Stashower is here now at the Bloomberg Sports Update. John?
All right, Nathan, after a couple of months of speculation, we finally heard from a commissioner with a definite plan for resuming the season. Gary Bettman says the NHL will not have any more regular season games. There will be a 2014 playoff starting sometime in July at two hub cities, which two he was not yet ready to say, but Las Vegas is seen as a favorite to land the games in the West. The top four teams in each conference will play round-robin games to determine top four seeding. The other eight will face off in either a best of five or seven. The Rangers will play the Carolina Hurricanes. The Islanders will take on the Florida Panthers. The Devils, one of seven teams not in the playoffs. They'll be in the draft lottery. But Bettman warns none of this is his top priority.
I want to make clear that the health and safety of our players, coaches, essential support staff, and our communities are paramount. While nothing is without risk, ensuring health and safety has been central to all of our planning so far and will remain so.
NHL says it is still hopeful next season we'll have the full 82 games. Baseball's pitch to the union regarding the economics of a return featured by a sliding scale of reduced salaries where the highest paid players would see their pay cut the most. Yankee ace Garrett Cole just signed for $36 million a year. He'd make roughly $8 million. Early reaction from players on this proposal, not positive. The Ryder Cup still on for late September in Wisconsin. It's an event where fans usually are very loud, so Rory McIlroy says it should be put off until 2021. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thanks. It's 6:37 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
HBO Max's biggest rival might be HBO. I'm Tara LaChapelle, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. The launch of HBO Max has finally arrived, but consumers don't seem to have a clue what's on the new streaming TV service. In a morning consult poll, most respondents couldn't pick out HBO Max content from a lineup of popular TV shows and movies. For example, less than 15% knew that the sitcoms Friends and The Big Bang Theory would now be on HBO Max. Even fewer correctly picked Sesame Street and the DC Comics films. Worse, 76% didn't know that Game of Thrones, one of HBO's most popular series ever, would also be available on HBO Max. The streaming wars have left consumers in a state of confusion, and it certainly doesn't help that AT&T's Warner Media now has multiple products bearing the HBO name. HBO Max, because of all its content, could give Netflix and Disney Plus a run for their money, but all the confusion might keep some consumers from signing up. I'm Tara LaChapelle. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. It's 6:38 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
Daimler is pushing ahead with plans to produce an all-electric version of its flagship Mercedes S-Class sedan starting next year, even as it cuts back in other areas amid a slump in demand across the industry. Speaking in a company webcast, Chief Executive Officer Ola Källenius said the company's main Mercedes-Benz Cars unit aims to make all of its factories CO2 neutral by the end of 2022. That goal was previously limited to Europe. Källenius stressed that he considers it critical for the carmaker to stick to its main strategic goal, including eliminating carbon emissions.
Even though we are fighting the COVID-19 challenge, we're not taking the eye off the ball on what's going on strategically.
And because of its commitment to focus on all-electric and hybrids, he says the company's big challenge will be powering those vehicles.
We're going to need more batteries.
To that end, Daimler is building more battery factories from Europe to the U.S. and China. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
All right, Bob, thank you. From green to beige, later today, the Federal Reserve issues its beige book, the Regional Economic Survey. And here with more is Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
Bloomberg Economics says the regional survey could provide clues on the economy's inflection point and the near-term outlook for the labor market. Georgia, for example, was one of the first states to reopen its economy, and the Atlanta Fed's contribution could shed some light on the situation. States have processed almost 40 million jobless claims since March. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Vinny, thanks. Also today, we hear from the New York Fed. President John Williams joins us for an exclusive interview coming up at 9:30 a.m. Wall Street time. You can catch that conversation on both Bloomberg Radio and television. Finally, Bloomberg News has learned Amazon is in talks to buy the driverless vehicle startup Zoox. A deal would accelerate Amazon's automation efforts. We're told the price is unlikely to be less than the $1 billion Zoox has already raised. Futures moving higher. S&P futures up 34 points. Dow futures up 341. NASDAQ futures up 62. This is Bloomberg. And it's just before 6:41 on Wall Street. Coming up, the U.S. considers sanctions on China on a number of fronts. We'll have more on that and the rest of the news out of Washington next with Bloomberg U.S. politics editor Kathleen Hunter.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures are higher this morning. S&P futures up 35 points. Dow futures up 346. And NASDAQ futures up 66. The DAX in Germany is up 1.7%. 10-year Treasury, little change. Yield 0.69%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.17%. NYMEX crude oil down 1.2% or 41 cents at $33.94 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.7% or $11.30 at $17.17 an ounce. The euro, 1.1019 against the dollar. The yen is at 107.73. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, President Trump plans to travel to Florida today to watch the launch of SpaceX's manned mission to the International Space Station. The launch will mark the first time NASA astronauts have blasted off from U.S. soil in 9 years. Republicans in the House mounted a legal challenge to a proxy voting procedure Democrats pushed through this month for colleagues who are housebound during the coronavirus pandemic. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. We're at 6:48 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories from the nation's capital include President Trump meeting with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo at the White House before heading to Canaveral for that SpaceX rocket launch. House Republicans heading to court to try to stop proxy voting, and Twitter adding a fact check for the first time to one of President Trump's tweets. Also making news, the U.S. considering a range of sanctions against China over its crackdown on Hong Kong. For the very latest, we're joined now by Bloomberg U.S. politics editor Kathleen Hunter. And from what we've been reporting, Kate, it's a range of fronts from the White House to Congress. So what's on the table here?
Well, I think, as you said, you know, the main thing is that it looks as though the Treasury Department might be looking at freezing some transactions and imposing other penalties potentially on Chinese companies as well as individuals. And so I think those are sort of the main things that are potentially on the table, along with some visa restrictions potentially on Chinese officials as well.
So what are the chances that those kinds of sanctions get a serious look-see by the White House and actually get imposed?
Well, I think that it is something that does sound like it's seriously on the table. Trump was asked about it yesterday, and while he wasn't, you know, committal one way or another, it's certainly at the very least being put out there as a bit of a trial balloon, you know, to kind of put China on notice and Beijing on notice that this is something that the U.S. government is considering at this stage.
And obviously, this is related to the crackdown on Hong Kong. Meantime, in the House, it looks like some sanctions are going to pass on a different front.
Yeah, and this is more directly related to China's treatment of Muslim minority communities. This is something, this legislation would essentially impose some sanctions, human rights-related sanctions in response to that. And that's something that passed the Senate earlier this year and is now potentially up for a final vote in the House, although there are some last-minute snags at this point.
And it's interesting because the Trump administration hasn't always made the human rights issue something that it wants to bring up with China. But when you put that in contrast with these potential sanctions due to the crackdown on Hong Kong, I mean, how is that likely to affect U.S.-China relations? I mean, it seems like they're kind of at the lowest point, and they've been at low points for years here.
Absolutely. And it's a bit of a mixed bag because in one sense, you know, the fact that this House legislation is related to a human rights issue means that it's likely to gain traction, or it is gaining traction in the democratically controlled House, and that there's a lot of bipartisan support, you know, both in the House and Senate for moving this forward. And we're likely to see that today. You know, that being said, I think people have noted that it's an interesting time for Trump, who, you know, over time has talked about, you know, President Xi Jinping as being a dear friend of his, someone that he, you know, touts very often his relationship with. Now that, you know, the U.S.-China relationship has essentially gone south in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, we are seeing this increased emphasis on the part of the Trump administration and Republicans on China's human rights abuses, which is not something that the White House had really been focused on prior to this.
Now, when the House votes on the sanctions measure today, it's going to be doing it by proxy, and Republicans are going to court to try to stop that. Tell us more about what's happening there.
Yeah, this is one of these issues that's really interesting. You know, it's because Democrats are in control of the House, Republicans are the ones that are getting very up in arms about the idea of proxy voting and changing this historical precedent to allow it. You know, you've always been required, you know, for the entirety of the House's existence, you know, it's been a requirement that members come and vote in person. Now they're allowing, because of the social distancing necessitated by the coronavirus, they're allowing proxy voting, and that's something that the Democrats pushed through in order to continue to set their own rules in the House. That is their prerogative, but also to push forward their legislative agenda. Obviously, that's something Republicans want to stop, and so now we're seeing Republicans go to court to try to stop proxy voting, making this argument about the constitutionality of it and raising those questions, you know, given that they are the ones that are in the minority and want to use all the tools at their disposal to stop the Democrats.
All right. It's going to be interesting to watch how that legal process plays out. Bloomberg U.S. Politics Editor Kathleen Hunter, thank you as always. You can read more about all these stories at Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal, and follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington at Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Karen.
All right, Nathan, thank you. We're coming up to 6:53 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. New Jersey Institute of Technology and the NJ Scholar Corps program incentivizing residents who attend college out of state to come home and finish their degree in New Jersey. Learn more at njit.edu/NJComeHome. Now here's Bob Moon.
Karen, Nathan, good morning. Here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. We've been encountering a lot of disruptions since the coronavirus outbreak began, but you know it's bad when you can't even depend on receiving robocalls. Ever since the Wiley automated calling machine was released into the wild, those relentless intrusions into our lives have seemed as difficult to block as the coronavirus. Now, the robocall prevention app and service UMail reports the volume of robocalls received in the U.S. last month was at its lowest in 2 years, with the daily robocall average down a whopping 44%. Many of those lost robocalls had come from call centers in such places as India, Pakistan, and the Philippines, where the industry has been scrambling to equip workers who don't own laptops to support working from home. Some scam operations, meantime, have changed tactics to maximize the messages that are getting through, some targeting victims' stimulus checks, unemployment payments, and other benefits.
Hello, this is a call from the Social Security Administration. During these difficult times of the coronavirus, we regret to inform you that we have got an order to suspend your socials immediately within 24 hours due to suspicious and fraudulent activity found on your socials. We are contacting you as this case is critical and needs your urgent attention.
The federal government credits the robocall reduction to more aggressive efforts to stop coronavirus-related scams. That's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM report. Nathan, Karen.
All right, Bob, thank you very much. It's coming up to 6:55 now on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Small Business Report with John Tucker. John, good morning.
Nathan, good morning. Clayton Bouchong owns the Cantina Lobos Mexican restaurant in Pelham, New York. We spoke with him 2 months ago. In the wake of the COVID-19 outbreak, his business was barely hanging on. Clayton joins us again now. Tell us, how's the restaurant surviving in a world of stay-at-home orders and takeout only?
We survived well. We're lucky that we're in a small town that's manageable, that's super supportive. We really concentrated on pivoting to takeout, and now we're actually starting to rethink about how we're going to strategize the restaurant, how we're going to make everybody feel safe, and how we're going to continue to offer the takeout biz, because we think it's going to be strong to the summer, just because a lot of people don't want to go out.
Can you guess when the revenue will be back to pre-pandemic levels?
My gut tells me that the revenues were, you know, close to pre-pandemic levels towards the end. I think that there's definitely been a tiring of it all, probably right around Cinco de Mayo, which was a boon for us, obviously. And then it hasn't tailed off. It's been solid to keep all my staff and to keep the hours up, but it's kind of tailed off. I think obviously people are getting a little tired of everything. I'm a little concerned about pivoting back to the restaurant, because they're only going to let us have, I don't know, they haven't announced exactly the amount, but, you know, we've heard anywhere from 25 to 50% of capacity. And who's going to want to come to the restaurant and sit inside? Will takeout continue? So, you know, I feel positive about the future, but we're optimistically pessimistic about it.
Have you any clarity as to when the dining room might reopen?
You know, we're shooting on that the phase one is going to go well, and then phase two. So we're looking at a month. We're starting to get our plexiglass in for the booths. We have booth seating, and so we're going to start plexiglassing the booths. And then, but no, there's no real guidance. I saw a little bit over the weekend that they said you're going to have to designate someone to be the chief cleaning expert and they're going to have to make sure that everything happens on time. Everything gets wiped down after every seating. Every bathroom gets cleaned after every bathroom use. So it might turn out that we have to have even more employees doing more things, like just one guy attending the bathroom all night long.
All right, Clayton, sounds like things will be different once things reopen in your area. Let us know how it goes. Clayton Bouchong, the owner of Cantina Lobos Mexican Restaurant in Pelham, New York. And we're going to continue bringing you the stories about small businesses struggling, pivoting, adapting in the face of this pandemic every day at this time on Bloomberg Radio. I'm John Tucker. That is your Bloomberg Small Business Report. Karen.
All right, John Tucker, thank you. S&P futures again higher this morning, up about 33 points. Dow futures up 332, and NASDAQ futures, they're up 66. And Bloomberg surveillance is straight ahead with Jonathan Farrow and Lisa Abramowitz. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.